Dad's Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films The Craft Legacy, The Witches, actually the original as well as the remake, Truth Seekers on Amazon, and His House on Netflix. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring the much-anticipated Season 2 of The Mandalorian. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
I'm going to forego the actual news stories right now and dive into something that I think is basically a public service to everybody, especially this weekend, because it is Halloween weekend. Halloween is Saturday night, and even if you're celebrating it all through the weekend and you're going to be doing all the Halloween celebrations into All Saints Day, it's still fun to enjoy the weekend for everything that it is as a Halloween holiday. And unfortunately, because of COVID, the opportunity to do cool stuff on Halloween has been reduced. So while you can't go to haunted houses and you really shouldn't be having big Halloween parties, and trick-or-treating has been altered in a lot of places, either different hours or canceled altogether, or I rigged something up for my mom, one of those PVC pipes that she could just send the candy down so she didn't have to get too close to the kids. You know, so everything's been a little bit different. And I think the thing we're going to be relying on this weekend is movies and television and streaming options. And fortunately, we live in a world where there are a lot of these things. What to watch and where you can watch it. Now, the movie that I think everybody tries to find on Halloween is John Carpenter's Halloween. Now, of course, there's dozens of versions of that on DVD and Blu-ray, and I've got a VHS copy of it, I've got a DVD version of it, I've got a Blu-ray version of it. I've got multiple versions of Halloween. I also have Halloween 2 and 3 and some of the other ones, including the Halloween movie that came out a couple years ago. But if you don't have that and you want to watch Halloween, obviously you can go to any place online that rents stuff like Vudu or Amazon or iTunes, and you can rent it for, it's a couple bucks. It's like $2 or $3. But if you're running into some finance problems and you want to watch something, if you have a Roku box, this is the one place I've been able to find it streaming for free this week. And that is, if you have a Roku box, go to the Roku channel. They have it available on demand section for free in their Halloween section. Now, first of all, you're going to have to deal with some ads in it. Oh, well, that's the price you pay for something for free. But at least you get to watch Halloween, and you can watch it Halloween weekend, and that works. Now, a lot of these streaming channels have a breakout section for Halloween. A couple of them I would like to point out, in particular Peacock, which is the NBC Universal streaming service. They have a whole section on Halloween, and they break it down into genres and specifics and demographics. They have even a kid section. They have a section in there where it's all the Harry Potter movies. And I know that's not Halloween, but, you know, witchcraft, wizardry, all that kind of stuff. Harry Potter is certainly Halloween adjacent. And the other thing that they have is Universal's, of course, known for the Universal Monster movies, the old black and white Dracula, Frankenstein, Wolfman, Mummy. Now, most of those movies are available for free on Peacock. Again, you'll have to deal with embedded advertising, but, you know, such is the price you pay. There's a couple of them, like I think the original Frankenstein with Boris Karloff. That one is, unfortunately, not available on the free version of Peacock, but I think the original Dracula is. And a bunch of the sequels, including Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman and House of Dracula, House of Frankenstein, Dracula's Daughter, and I think a bunch of the Mummy movies, with the exception of the very first one, are all available for free on Peacock. So if you're old school, that's where you can go to find a whole bunch of old creepy movies like that. On the Disney Plus service, they also have a Halloween breakout section, which includes some of their bigger known movies like Nightmare Before Christmas or Hocus Pocus or Frankenweenie. But they also have a whole bunch of the Disney Channel movies they made over 20 years or so. Stuff like Twitches and Halloween Town. So if you've got kids, that's what you can do. And it's a nice, safe zone that you can go without seeing anything horrible or terrifying. If you're into slasher movies, go to Tubi TV. They have a whole bunch of obscure 80s movies, including a lot of the slasher movies, especially the ones you've not heard of. Again, that's free. You have some advertising, but they've got some great stuff in there. Hulu and Amazon Prime both have breakout sections for Halloween as well. Hulu centers more on the TV stuff. Amazon Prime, you can see a lot of movies, and it breaks out the stuff that's available. Also, what's interesting about Amazon Prime is you can go in there and have embedded subscriptions, so you can get like a Shudder account and watch the Shudder series and movies through Amazon Prime, which is, I think, where a lot of the streaming is going to be going. You're going to start seeing these outlets available. And then finally, something that is available on Hulu and Peacock. Peacock in particular, you can find a lot of the Halloween special episodes of different TV series. I think both Hulu and Peacock do that to some degree. Prime Video kind of does that as well. And the Disney Channel will break out Halloween segments from the Disney Channel programs. And then, of course, Netflix has all the contemporary stuff, the stuff that's relatively new. So those are some great things that you can find on Halloween or this Halloween weekend. Those are my suggestions for people out there who are looking for good things to watch with plenty of horror options. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to jump into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is Mank, which opens in theaters on November 13th and on Netflix December 4th.
Hello, everyone.
Make yourself to home, Mr. Mankiewicz, or shall I call you Herman?
Please, call me Mank.
New York playwright and drama critic
turned humble screenwriter, Mr. Hearst.
This is a business where the buyer gets nothing for his money but a memory. What he bought still belongs to the man who sold it. That's the real magic of the movies.
I hear you're hunting dangerous game.
God bless William Randolph Hearst.
Ready and willing to hunt the great white whale?
Just call me Ahab.
This is directed by David Fincher, and it's the story of Herman Mankiewicz as he developed the screenplay for Citizen Kane. Now, I'm not a big fan of Citizen Kane. I think Citizen Kane is fine. I don't think it's the greatest movie ever made. It's more groundbreaking than anything else in terms of story and development and pacing. But this looks like interesting. I mean, I blow hot and cold with David Fincher. I think he sometimes gets overly pretentious. I'm curious to see this one because it looks like he's trying to shoot this movie as if it were Citizen Kane, which is kind of a cool approach. It's going to be limited release in a couple weeks, like on the 13th. Then it's going to be doing a wide release on Netflix. The other one I want to hit really quickly is News of the World, starring Tom Hanks. He's a captain in this one. It's in another movie directed by Paul Greengrass, because of course he was Captain Phillips, in theaters on Christmas Day.
It says your name is Johanna Leonberger. Indians took you when they attacked your family 6 years prior. The mother, father, and sister were, well, they passed. She's got family down in Castroville.
Captain, why are you doing this?
She needs to laugh and dream. She needs new memories.
This is a story about a guy who reads the news to people back in the Old West and then finds this girl who was taken in by an Indian tribe after they killed her family, which is not an uncommon thing that happened back then, and it's him trying to find a way for her back to her family. I have yet to figure out where it's going, whether it's going to be somber Western or shoot 'em up Western, because it kind of has both in the trailer, and it's sort of like, are you going Clint Eastwood spaghetti Western or Clint Eastwood Unforgiven era? This looks good. I mean, I like Paul Greengrass. I like Tom Hanks. This one looks like it's going to be an interesting movie. I can't wait to see it. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Witches, both the original and the remake. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. This week is kind of a witch's theme with this one, because not only do I have the new Kraft movie to talk about, I've got both versions of the witches I want to talk about. And the thing with the witches, I never saw the original one. I remember going to go see it. I literally got in the car and drove to go see it with my mother in 1990. I can't remember what happened. I think she went to go buy the tickets, and I went into the video arcade, and we were deciding between this or My Blue Heaven, the Steve Martin, Rick Moranis movie. Turned out she ended up accidentally buying tickets to that instead of the witches. I don't remember what the circumstance. I think we were just on the fence which ones to go see, and we made the decision for the witches, and then she forgot. So I ended up going to see My Blue Heaven, which is a cute enough little movie for what it was, but I never saw The Witches. I never got back around to seeing it. And when I found out they were remaking it, I said, this is a good enough reason to go and watch it, because I'm a huge fan of Roald Dahl. I've read some of his books. I've seen a lot of his movies. He is just an out there guy who has some really neat ideas and tells really great stories. So I took a point to go watch The Witches, which is available at least through the end of the month. I don't know if it's going to change in November, but I watched The Witches, the original one. It's available on Netflix right now. And that's what's interesting about Netflix. Netflix uses a lot of contemporary stuff. They do a lot of newer movies. They generate their own content. They purchase stuff or distribute stuff from the UK and other countries. But I'd say 80%, if not 90% of their content is within the last 10 or 20 years. So it's kind of rare to see a movie like The Witches, which is 30 years old, show up on the surface. But I jumped at the chance and I watched it. You can watch it too. And in the movie, Anjelica Houston stars in this adaptation of Roald Dahl's book about a boy facing off with a coven of witches at a swanky seaside resort.
The Witches. For when a little boy accidentally stumbles into their secret world, he finds they've got a lot more power.
Bring it to me!
Than he ever imagined.
Grandma! It's me, Luke!
Luke!
They turned me into a mouse.
Oh, my.
Who's the Grand High Witch?
Not even for a tweet.
We must stop them.
The original is British, and it feels British. It takes place in a British hotel. You've got Rowan Atkinson as the hotel manager. And it was made sort of at this time, not that they didn't have high-budgeted movies and lots of special effects in the 80s, but you didn't have the digital effects yet. You still were 3 years away from Jurassic Park when they showed what you could do with realistic skin on dinosaurs. So at this point, you were still using a lot of standard opticals, and they went through Jim Henson's creature department to do the bit with the mouse. Cause the whole thing is these witches, they have this coven, they're having this meeting. They want to get rid of all the children in the world, and they have a plan to turn them into mice. And the kids as mice have to go try and thwart the witches' plans. And it's a fun little movie. It's not to be taken too seriously. And it does get absurd and slapsticky and goofy, especially near the end. The story hinges on this boy and his grandmother going to this hotel, but the real star of this is Anjelica Houston. This is even before the Addams Family movies, where she kind of plays those tongue-in-cheek. You know, this was sort of Preetzi's Honor era. You know, this was when she was still considered a very, almost a regal actor. And she just dives into this role. She just loves playing the Queen of the Witches or the High Witch. And it reminds me a little bit of, if you've watched the Into the Woods adaptation, I'm not a big fan of that, but I loved Meryl Streep's performance in that because she just had such fun playing the bad guy. And in this one, Anjelica Houston, I mean, she chews the scenery. I mean, she is relentless in how corny her performance is, but she gives it all and you can tell there's full enjoyment there. And that's what makes it so fun to watch. But like I said, there's elements of British culture in there too, because it takes place in Britain. It's in a seaside British resort. You've got Rowan Atkinson there. You got Jane Horrocks, who was later known to play Bubble, the secretary, in Absolutely Fabulous. It's very much a British movie. I gotta say, I had a lot of fun. This one takes me back to my childhood. It feels like a kid's movie without dumbing things down. So I'm gonna say The Witches from 1990 rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the remake, The Witches, which is available on HBO Max right now. I believe this weekend, because it's Halloween weekend, it is playing in some limited theaters. Which, by the way, Halloween is, too. You can usually find in the theaters that are open, especially the ones that are doing retro programming, you can find Halloween. But anyways, in The Witches, it's changed up a little bit. Chris Rock narrates this tale about a kid who travels with his grandmother to a resort in Alabama, only to encounter an evil coven of witches bent on getting rid of all the children in the world.
Witches. They're real. And they hate children.
I feared this was happening.
Then here, that means a test is coming.
Ladies, I have a plan. Vondro, the transform a child into a mouse.
Why are we mouses?
Mice.
Whatever.
This is different in the sense of mainly because of the setting. It takes place in Alabama because you got Chris Rock as this Southern black child. And well, I think he's originally from Chicago, and he ends up, after his parents are killed in a car accident, living with his grandmother down in Alabama. And she's played by Octavia Spencer. And no flies on the woman who played grandma in the first movie, but Octavia Spencer steals the show in this one. She grounds this with heart and emotion, but still allows it to be absurd and silly. She's the only one he can trust when he turns into a mouse. And really, Octavia Spencer is what adds the humanity to this movie. But this is exactly what a remake should be. It pays homage to the original film. It tries to do something similar, but doesn't go over the top. Now, one of the things, it's directed by Robert Zemeckis, and he is known for kind of getting distracted with all the technology in his movies. You know, a movie like What Lies Beneath would have been a better movie if he wasn't trying so many camera tricks. And you see that a lot. The technology will kind of get away from Robert Zemeckis. And yes, he uses digital effects in this one, especially, you know, for the more absurd, crazy, over-the-top slapstick moments. But he doesn't go completely overboard on it. And it still is this cute little movie that takes place in a hotel with mice trying to stop witches. Now, Anne Hathaway plays the High Witch, and she's got big shoes to fill. I think Anne Hathaway chews the scenery a little bit too much, and I think she's doing so to live up to the performance that Angelica Houston did. But the difference was, Anne Hathaway's played Goofy before. Angelica Houston really hadn't, and so it was such a neat thing to watch her do, whereas in this one, Anne Hathaway, it just looks like it's an overblown, overacted performance at times. I mean, I still think she's fine. She does a good job in the role. But Angelica Houston, you can't touch her performance in the original. Now, in this one, you've got Stanley Tucci as the hotel manager, and he's fantastic. So it's very charming and wonderful, and it reminds me very much of the original. So if you have HBO Max or you can find it in the theaters, this is absolutely worth checking out. It's a great little kids movie, and it has a great cast. So I'm going to have to say that The Witches, the 2020 version, rocks as well.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about his house and the Kraft legacy. At the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the witch's motif and take a look at the Kraft legacy. A girl travels to a new town to move in with her mother's boyfriend, and at school she befriends three other girls who come together to have magical powers.
This is all just a little crazy.
Half the battle of having powers is believing you do. That's why covens have always been important.
If we can do that, can we do?
We need to put a spell on Timmy.
We don't want to hurt him, though, right?
She's right.
The number one rule of the craft: if a person is a danger to herself or others, they will be bound.
It's not a remake, although it does feel like it could be, but it's not a remake. It's actually a sequel. It has a minor tie to the original film. But the original film, The Craft, came out in 1996. And I remember seeing it. I don't think I saw it in the theaters. I think I just watched it on VHS one day. I don't even think I saw it on DVD. I don't know. It was at some point after it came out. It's not my movie. It's not made for me. This is very much a girl film, a girl power film. And the original, The Craft, centered on the girl structure and the issues girls go through in school, dealing with boys and dealing with image issues and dealing with friends and bullies. But it was still very 90s. And it had a good cast of Fruza Balk and you had Robin Tunney and Neve Campbell and Rachel True as the Coven of Witches. But they spread the story around to the four of them. And everybody had their own thing going on, with, of course, Fruza Balk kind of going crazy in this whole thing. This version, it does some neat things. First of all, the actress looks very similar to Robin Tunney, who of course, is, you know, she's an adult now. It's been 25 years. But, you know, the girl looks like her, so you almost want to feel it's a remake. The biggest difference between this and the previous film is this one deals with a little bit more contemporary issues, stuff that's a little more socially relevant and a little bit more stuff that teenagers are facing today. Now, there's the same stuff that you're going to get. You got bullying going on. You've got boy issues. You've got the worry of sexual assault and how to protect yourself from that, because that's, of course, comes up in both movies. This one, though, has, like, one of the girls is a trans girl. They just kind of throw that in there. They don't dwell on that. They just kind of toss that in there. And it's, of course, a trans actress playing her. But mainly, the story focuses on Lilith, who's this Lily, who's the main character, which is very different than how they did it in the original Craft, where the original Craft, they kind of spread it around through the four girls. There was kind of a main character, which was Robin Tunney's, but they did kind of spread the story around. But this is 100% Lily's story. And it also deals with the social inequities of school, what you can make fun of a girl for that you can't make fun of a boy for, or why certain things which are natural to women. I'm talking a little bit, you know, around here, because this is a family show, but there's things that happen to women that don't happen to boys, and how that can become a point of bullying, and why that shouldn't be, because it's just a very natural thing that happens. Like I said, it really kind of centers on this girl, but it also focuses on some other things that have been bubbling under our own society, stuff like toxic masculinity, because the character of the new stepfather, I don't think they're getting married, but they're just moving in. David Duchovny plays the father, and he's one of these self-help guys, men rights kind of thing, where he teaches men to be men and be masculine and be proud of it, and to shy away from anything that's considered feminine. The only time you should be cooking is if you're at a grill kind of person, which is nonsense. I mean, that's absolute nonsense. And, you know, there are people who perpetuate that, but they're dumb. I mean, that's stupid. You know, men can do a lot of things and women can do a lot of things as well. So that's one of the things she's facing, because in her new life, she's got to deal with this new father figure and three brothers. So you are facing the toxic masculinity, the mansplaining, the don't talk unless you're talked to kind of overbearing alpha dog kind of machismo that really is kind of stupid. But this is a good movie. The reason I like this movie is it's more subtle than the first one. The first one gets a little bit big at times because it was mid-90s, they were just discovering animation, like CGI. They could figure out what they were doing. Remember I said in the Witches, they hadn't gotten to the point yet with CGI? Well, they were fully into the CGI world in 1996, so they go a little big with some stuff in the original The Craft, and they spread it around to the four girls. This one, they focus on Lilith, and that's better because it gives you a central character. But overall, I liked it. I thought it was good. I mean, the whole Craft thing is mainly for girls. Girls in high school who feel like they're misfits. Now, if you're a guy in high school and you were into goth chicks, you benefited a lot from a movie like The Craft. And you're going to benefit a lot from a movie like The Craft Legacy. But ultimately, it's a girls' film. And, you know, take it from a big fat guy that I enjoyed it. So I'm going to say The Craft Legacy rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about his house. A couple fleeing violence in the Sudan gain refugee status in the UK, only to find their home is haunted by those who were lost along the way.
Congratulations. You're being released as asylum seekers. Not as citizens, not yet. You will be sent to a home of our choosing.
This entire house is just for us.
It's going to be nice. You're going to be happy. As long as you can get along, fit in.
I saw something in the dark. You have felt it too.
How quickly you forget.
It's weird because on one hand, it certainly has elements of a horror movie to it. I mean, it's an offshoot. It's a new take on a haunted house. But it's also very different. It's a very different type of movie. It is not just a jump scare creeping around the corner type film. His House takes a lot of these elements of horror and uses them to equate them to the struggles of a refugee. The whole point of this movie is they show up and they're given the status and they're given a place to live and they're told, you can't move. You must stay in this place. And it's actually a relatively big place for two people. Now, along the way, they've lost their daughter who drowned in the Mediterranean Sea. And they're dealing with that guilt. And so the haunting is they feel like that girl's spirit and other people who are lost along the way is what's haunting them. So it's about survivorship guilt. It's about guilt of what you have to do to get out of a war-torn area like the Sudan. You know, you're willing to do whatever you can, and you sometimes break up your own morals in doing so. It also shows how hard it is to fit in. And I mean, yeah, I mean, obviously it's under this backdrop of this house that you can't escape from that is tearing you apart emotionally, but you're stuck there. There's even like little changes they have to do that, you know, just culturally, like one example, you know, in the Sudan, they would sit on the floor around a small table and they'd eat with their hands. That was just the culture. And they have a whole scene in there where they're having to deal with the fact that they're using silverware. And they're having to sit at a table. And it's not normal for them. It's normal for you and me. You know, people in America, people in the UK sit around normal tables all the time. But if you've never done that, if that's not your way of life, that's a huge difference. And the husband is trying to assimilate as best he can. And he's getting resistance from the mother because she's feeling the effects of being in the house. And this is all a manifestation symbolically of all the struggles they're going through as refugees and immigrants. And there's some things to be revealed and some twists in the plot. But I mean, it works as a creepy, terrifying movie, being in a house that you can't escape from because you're just legally not allowed to. And the effect it has on your mind and how it can drive you mad. But also all of those can be real problems in the real world. And you don't need ghosts and witches and goblins to do that. You just need somebody fleeing something horrible in their home country to put that much stress in somebody's mind. So that's why I think it's a worthwhile movie. It has a lot more to say than just, oh, hey, here's a haunted apartment somewhere in England. So I'm going to have to say His House kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Truth Seekers and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring The Mandalorian Season 2. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the reviews, and this one's actually going to be a TV series. It's not a movie. So I guess it's Fat Guys at TV right now. And I want to talk about Truth Seekers, which is available on Amazon Prime right now. Nick Frost stars as a cable installer who hunts ghosts on the side, facing greater encounters with the paranormal.
You ever had a paranormal experience?
This is my YouTube channel.
Most Haunted Institute of the Criminally
Insane.
I don't want anything to do with ghosts ever again.
Help! I think I'm being chased by ghosts.
Something is not right.
You're just scratching the surface. There's a bigger world out there.
You're in danger.
These aren't just restless spirits. These are malevolent entities.
Welcome, truth seekers.
This is put together by Nick Frost and Simon Pegg. If you've seen movies like Shaun of the Dead or Hot Fuzz, that's who they are. You've seen them in a lot of stuff. Simon Pegg shows up in a ton of things. He was in the new Star Trek movies playing Scotty. This is a UK series, so it takes place in England, and it also stars actors and actresses from other British programming that you've seen. Julian Barrett from The Mighty Boosh shows up. Kelly MacDonald shows up. If you watch enough British programming, particularly comedy programming, you're going to see some of these people show up here and there. There's one character, very small role. She's just in one scene. But she is from the TV series The Windsors, which is a comedic look at the royal family. You can find that one on Netflix. So I was a little nervous when I was getting ready to watch it because they had done, the two of them, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, had done that movie with Seth Rogen as the alien Paul. And one of the things that they sometimes run into is they have they're almost like Ricky Gervais, where at times they're sort of their atheism and pragmatic science gets away from them, and they don't want to deal with the paranormal or aliens because it's sort of outside the realm of what they would consider. But they allow for the ghosts. I mean, in this series, they are in fact hunting ghosts. It's not Scooby-Doo ghosts. So it is not some caretaker with a rubber mask on at the end who's like, haha, I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you kids. It is a story of ghost hunters. Because that's what it is Nick Frost, he's this cable installer, and he's one of the best in the business, which is sort of absurd. That's the way they're presenting it. And he's got a new partner named Elton John, who doesn't look anything or act anything like the real Elton John is, but it's just, he's this British kid who's, you know, trying to make his living. And on the side, Nick Frost's character Gus does this Truth Seekers series, which is like a web series on YouTube. And as they start going to these cable installations, they run into more and more paranormal elements. They run into this woman who is saying she's being chased by ghosts or being haunted by ghosts. And there seems to be a greater occurrence of paranormal activity. Sort of like in the movie Ghostbusters, how suddenly more and more ghosts start showing up. It was heading towards something. So there's this overreaching arc through the season of the 8 episodes, and each episode's about a half hour, but there's this overreaching arc over the 8 episodes that they're following, is kind of like an overall mystery, not just solving these little ghost hunting episodes per episode. There is a greater storyline to be seen, and it's funny because it is the, it's not overly slapstick. I mean, we're not talking like a Mr. Bean episode. It's more on the lines of something like, if you remember the movie Hot Fuzz or even Shaun of the Dead, you have these absurd characters in what you could consider sort of a genre template. And the characters could be realistic, because if you remember Shaun of the Dead, the whole thing was this, the character of Nick Frost in that one, he just wanted to hang out with his buddies at the pub. And you throw those characters into a zombie movie, and that's what you get. And that's essentially what you end up with Truth Seekers. It's clever and it's fun. It's not too British, if that makes sense. I mean, if you're somebody who doesn't like British humor, I think you can still watch this and enjoy it for what it is. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. It's very breezy. You can get through 8 episodes. It's a great binge watch for Halloween weekend. So I'm going to have to say the Truth Seekers rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week, I'm doing a spotlight on The Mandalorian Season 2, which has just started off on Disney+. In The Mandalorian, the child continues to travel with his bounty hunter pal to find safety and his people.
You must reunite it with its own kind.
Where?
This you must determine. The songs of eons past tell of battles between Mandalore the Great and an order of sorcerers called Jedi.
You expect me to search the galaxy and deliver this creature to a race of enemy sorcerers?
This is the way.
Now, I'm not reviewing the whole season. Disney has been very restrictive on how much of this they let out. They're very concerned about spoilers because the internet is a treasure trove of spoilers for Star Wars. And I've actually even seen that there's articles out there that people are writing that they claim to know more of the story. I don't know. I haven't read those articles. I don't want the thing spoiled for me. And so Disney is leaking out one episode per week and to the press as well. I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe there's really super high level anointed press who get more, but the press is basically getting one episode a week as well. And that's fair. You know, you can watch it with everybody else. And I've seen the first episode. It's a 50-minute episode, so it's longer than some of them. You know, it's essentially an hour of television. It's directed by Jon Favreau, who, of course, created the Mandalorian story. And it's him continuing to take the child, the baby Yoda, trying to find the child's people. And that's what he's been tasked with. Now, along the way, it seems like he's going to be running into people that he ends up having to help. As much as this is a Western, you know, that's really what this is meant to be played after. It's the good, the bad, and the ugly. I mean, literally the man with no name walking out there into the world and trying to have this task, but ultimately he's a good person and he ends up helping people along the way. Reminds me a little bit of that old TV series, The Fall Guy with Lee Majors, where he was a stuntman, but he ended up running into people all the time. You had that. This was a very common trope you had in TV from the 70s. BJ and the Bear did that. The guy who drove around in a semi truck with a chimpanzee, he'd go to town. He'd find somebody to help. I remember there was another series that ended up getting parodied on Mystery Science Theater called The Master with Lee Van Cleef as this ninja warrior, as absurd as that was, and Timothy Van Patten. And they'd go week to week and help somebody out because they went to some town. And that's essentially what it looks like this is going to continue being with this overall story of finding other Mandalorians and finding the family and the people of the child. It does have that, like I said, man with no name showing up at a town and helping out. And that's essentially the anchor of this first episode, is he shows up on this town on Tatooine and has to help the miners there stop something bad from happening. I grew up as a Star Wars kid. I was like 5 when the first movie came out, so it dominated my life as a child. And I remember as a kid going, oh, I wish I could just live in the Star Wars universe. You remember that excitement. And one of the things I find fascinating about The Mandalorian, and in particular, it shows up in this episode, is the Star Wars universe wasn't great to live in. I mean, it was an oppressive military regime, a galactic fascist government. And even when the government falls, you have all the outskirts that are controlled by gangsters and everything. And these people just have pathetic lives that are trying to live as a moisture farmer or whatever on Tatooine. So it kind of reveals the fact that living in the Star Wars universe was kind of miserable for a lot of people. Not everybody was Luke Skywalker fighting the Empire. And I find that interesting. The other thing I loved about this is they tie things to the other movies, even if it's just like a piece of technology. A great example is, and you saw this with the Amy Sedaris character in the first season. She had the droids from episode 1 that Watto had in his place that worked on the pod racing. I love the fact they're not abandoning the prequels. They do tie things directly to the prequels. I mean, whether it's technology or a character or even just stuff that's in the background. I love the fact that they're not ashamed of the prequels and they are using it to enrich the world. And I think that that's fantastic. But I got to say, if you like the first season of The Mandalorian, this sets up some great stuff. And I'm really excited to see where this season goes. So I'm going to have to say the season premiere of The Mandalorian Season 2 totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Also available on DVD and Blu-ray is the Criterion version of Parasite, Daughters of Darkness in 4K, and High Plains Drifter, the special edition. That's a nice little pairing with The Mandalorian. Anyways, that's it for the week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Let Him Go, Kindred, and The Dark and the Wicked. Until then, have a happy Halloween and a fat time at the movies or at home.